So, Berto, I'm going to ask you a really deep question, a very important question at the start of the episode right now.
Okay.
Are you happy?
Ah, am I happy? Yes.
Okay, let's get into the nuances of that.
Okay.
And also look at all the research. We can take some quizzes to actually determine if you are right, if you are in fact happy. What do you say? Let's do that.
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I am Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor. Who are you?
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I'm a tarantula wasp trainer.
So part of the reason why I decided to do this episode is because I came across some new research that was going around. We'll start with a tougher bluff.
Okay.
The more you earn, the happier you are, the happier you are, but the happiness plateaus at $90,000 income for an individual.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that, so I'm going to go tough. I don't know if it's the plateau nowadays might have to be higher because everything's more expensive, but I'm going to go tough.
It's bluff.
Oh.
That was the consensus, that around 70, 80, 90,000 a year, that your happiness would plateau.
Right.
And this would often be bandied about as evidence that beyond a certain threshold of income, you're not benefiting anymore.
Right.
You're just taking money away from other people potentially being happy, meaning that you need a certain base level of security, a base level of not living paycheck to paycheck, that kind of thing. But new data shows that well-being continues to increase throughout the different categories of income. Not only your evaluative well-being is what they call it, meaning that someone's perception of their own life upon reflection, like how happy are you given your entire life, but also experience well-being, which is a person's mood, like how are you, you know.
I see.
So if I were to ask you, Berto, on a scale from, I don't know, 1 to 5, with 5 being like the highest, 1 being the lowest, how would you rate your well-being right now?
A 3.
And then what about your mood, like in terms of right at this minute, how you feel?
A 4.
Okay. And a 3, huh?
Well, if well-being, like, because well-being includes, like, health, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, whatever you consider to be part of your well-being, whatever contributes to your well-being.
Right.
So it's being dragged down
by
health issues
with
your thyroid issue.
Yeah, basically. And so if you, that's why if you ask me, like, you know, are you happy? I'm like, yeah. But then if we get into the nitty-gritty, it's like, well, I mean, you know, I have struggles with health and things like that. But then if you ask me what my mood is, well, I'm generally more positive than not. So I'd go like 4.
Right. Interesting. Okay. So let's take one of the quizzes here. There are a variety of happiness tests free on the internet. This first one is on Oprah.com.
Oh, nice.
I don't know how reliable it is, but let's get into it. It's shorter. So I picked quizzes that were on the shorter side.
All right. Does Oprah podcast. Still have a show?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Number one. So let's take it for you first, and then I'll take it for me after. I believe my life will truly begin, and you at home listening can also maybe play along. You won't know your code, but you might get a general idea of where you're at. So on a scale from never, infrequently, sometimes frequently. So that is the scale. There's no always. So never, infrequently, sometimes, and frequently. I believe my life will truly begin when the right person or circumstances come along.
Infrequently. That's what's the lowest one? Infrequently.
Never.
Oh, there is a never.
Yeah.
Okay. There's not an always, but there is a never.
Yeah.
So never.
So that question is trying to get at your current level of happiness, meaning that if you're pretty unhappy, one of the signs could be that you're waiting
for
this
for the right
perfect person or the perfect job or something to come along. And you're saying that, no, you're not sitting there waiting for something.
I'm not waiting for Guffman.
Or you've already achieved those things that you were waiting for.
Right. Yeah. But even before, well, I was so young. But yeah, no, in general, I would say no, I'm not waiting for someone.
Number two, I feel best when I give unconditionally to others. Frequently, sometimes, infrequently, never.
Frequently.
I feel best when I give unconditionally to others. That's an interesting question, because if you're never or infrequent, then what is that getting at? That's either getting at the fact that you don't have a lot to give, you
Could
know?
Be, yeah.
And so it would get at the fact that you're unhappy because you don't have a lot to give. Or that what? You're in a sort of selfish mindset because you're not getting enough in life, that kind of thing? Yeah. Is that?
I mean, if you have a lot of struggles for of whatever nature, financial or otherwise, you might not have the bandwidth to
right.
give.
Yeah. Number three, when I think about people in my life, I focus on those who have hurt or disappointed me. When I think about people in my life, I focus on those who have hurt or disappointed me.
No. Oh, yeah, sorry. Infrequently.
Okay. When I think about people in my life, I focus on those I care about and love.
Frequently.
There is not enough time for taking care of me. There's not enough time for taking care of me.
Me. Oh, I see. Like, you know, I'm so busy. I haven't been able to do blah. You know, this is something that in years prior, like when I started therapy, this would have been a frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was literally one of the themes. Nowadays, I'd go more like infrequently.
Infrequently.
Yeah. Hmm.
I've helped myself through difficult times with a strong positive attitude.
Frequently.
I take myself very, very seriously.
Ooh.
What is that question trying to get at? I take myself very, very... I mean, is that like a narcissistic thing? Or just like I'm very focused on trying to make my life better or something?
I'll just say sometimes.
That's a weird question. Come on, Oprah.com.
I can sometimes be very, very narcissistic.
I believe it's up to me to live my life fully and find meaning.
Frequently.
When things don't go well, I feel trapped or overwhelmed.
Infrequently.
Although life circumstances change, my beliefs and capabilities will allow me to survive and thrive.
Yeah, frequently.
Who wouldn't rather receive a gift than give one? Who wouldn't rather receive a gift than give one?
No. At least infrequently.
And yeah, this is stupid because the rubric is on frequency.
Yeah.
And this question is more of, do you agree with it or
yeah,
not? It's a very bad psychometric. So what'd you say?
Infrequently. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to say I never feel that way, but
there is a spiritual power that I can turn to for comfort when I need to.
Infrequently.
What do you mean? I mean, you're atheist, right? So
no, but I mean, it depends how you define spiritual. Like, I still believe that I have faith that I am supposed to do things in a certain way in this universe. And so that is spiritual in a way.
What do you mean? Like that there's order to the chaos?
Well, so I believe that no matter what you believe, faith is a requirement while you're a sentient being in this universe. Because you can't have proof about everything, or almost nothing, in fact. So you need to operate on faith. So, and then as far as me, I put faith on, like, I believe, without proof, that I need to aim towards creation and fostering instead of destruction and mayhem and maiming and stuff. So that I take on faith. And so I do think of myself as having a role to play in the universe. And that is, you know, you can characterize that as a spiritual destiny that I believe.
Is there a consequence if you do good or do bad?
Yeah, it is the nature of the vector of evolution of the universe. I can either help push in that direction, or I can be part of the little lost tendrils that never went anywhere.
But the universe is completely indifferent to the...
That's right. That's why it's up to me to participate or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, it's basically, if you don't participate, you've also made a decision. You're like, I won't be one of the tendrils that make it very far.
Yeah, so it's shown, research, that when one has a higher purpose, and also people who are religious tend to be happier.
Right.
So, you know.
I mean, the basic thing is, I am not a nihilist, and I do have faith in a purpose. I just don't have faith in a specific denomination of a religion. Mm-hmm. So.
Number 13, life is a big joke, and I am in the middle of it. Again, the metric is terrible. Fear keeps me from standing up for what I believe is right.
Never.
I'm...
Well, I would say infrequently, let's say. Infrequently.
I've grown emotionally, spiritually through difficult and painful life experiences.
Yeah. Frequently.
Frequently. That doesn't make any sense. If I don't have any money or love, then I can't feel secure.
Well, if I really didn't have any love or any money, I don't know if I would feel secure. So what's the middle one? Sometimes?
Or infrequently, yeah.
Yeah, I'll go sometimes.
I make taking care of my health a priority.
Yeah, frequently.
People hurt my feelings.
Some, infrequently.
Life is good. I really appreciate what I have.
Frequently.
I'm unclear about the purpose and meaning of my life.
Sometimes.
Sometimes?
Or, yeah, sometimes.
Huh. So that's, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's more than I thought you'd say.
Yeah.
So you're sometimes unclear about the purpose and meaning of your... Meaning well, yeah, that there's uncertainty. There's
yeah,
no,
see, some belief systems give you like one simple rule. All you have to do is believe this one little thing and state that you believe it and you're done. Everything else you do doesn't matter. In my belief system, I'm not entirely sure how to achieve my purpose. So I am frequent or I am sometimes unsure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What matters most is enjoying relationships and moments.
Yes, frequently.
I just have too much to do.
Sometimes.
I feel fulfilled.
Ooh, sometimes.
All right, submitting.
Okay.
Da, 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 da. So given the nature of the questions, where do you think you're at?
I would, like if it was a scale of 1 to 5, it might be a, and 5 is like you're very happy and 1 is you're very not happy. I might go like 4.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. They don't give us the scale, but your score is 60. And if you're between 50 and 72, you consider yourself a happy person. Okay. So I don't know.
I'm relatively happy.
Pretty bad metric, honestly, because they don't give. It's like, is there a possibility of getting higher than 72? well, let's see. I'm guessing not. See, how many questions were there? There were 23. So yeah, 72 is the highest score.
Okay.
So you got just 12 less than the highest score. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let's do another test. This one's a little shorter and it's on psycom.net, which is a website that has a lot of different, psychometric messages.
Reminds me of XCOM.
Yeah. Oh, I love that game. The first version, XCOM. Or it was actually 2, the second one. Okay. Number one, by the way, I would have answered very similar to you on that Oprah test, so I won't redo it just for me. Number one, I feel that, so this is always, so you got always, often, sometimes, rarely, never.
Okay, so almost the same, except there's an always.
Yeah, always, often, sometimes, rarely, never.
Okay.
I feel that life is very rewarding.
Often.
I am able to find the goodness in myself and others.
Often.
Oh, what do you mean? Like sometimes it's hard to find the goodness in yourself and others?
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
I mean, like general humans.
Well, no, even specifically me and others like that I know. Like, there's definitely been times where I'm like, wow, I did a really crappy thing. I can't believe it. Mm. And I know people that I love that sometimes they do really not good things. And it's,
yeah.
So I guess that's why I couldn't say always.
Right. Number three, I am optimistic about the future. Well, so that's interesting because that second question could get out a lot of things, right? Because as you talk about your life, and I know, I don't know what you were thinking of when you were thinking of specific people, but I know that there are people in your personal life and in your family life who have wronged you in some pretty major ways,
right,
past and present. Thus, when you ask the question, I'm able to find the goodness in other people. You know,
sometimes.
Like often, yeah, but often, there are occasions. Often. Whereas for me, I have the privilege of having a pretty good luck of the draw in life and don't have people in my life or in my family that are like that.
Right.
And so for me, I would say
it's
really easy. I would say always for me, because there's really not opportunities. I guess there are people I've worked with that were, you know, colleagues of mine that were, but it's pretty rare, and especially now because I can engineer my life so specifically.
And that's why I would go often. Not always. I would just like inch it back from always because of that. Yeah.
And happiness is circumstantial.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I think it's getting at that. I am optimistic about the future.
Often.
What do you mean?
I am optimistic. I am an optimist. And it gets harder and harder as time goes by because I think two phenomena. One, more things happen that seem to be out of our control. And that, I think, is just the nature of this universe. And two, I get older. And then you also feel like you have less control Mm-hmm. You know, even though I have, obviously I am more in control of finances or, you know, my own decisions and things, at the same time, like, I have less control over what's going to happen to me and my health and my future. And maybe control is not the right word, but whatever. And so as a result, yeah, I'd say it's not an always.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you don't use reading glasses, or do you?
I do.
Oh, you do?
Oh, well, not reading glasses. I actually can read better without either contacts or glasses.
Yeah.
But I use contacts and glasses for distance.
For distance.
Yeah.
And when you wear those, you don't need reading glasses to read?
Not yet, but I probably will.
Yeah. 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 Because I'm getting to that point where it's not looking good for my eyes. I evaded it for a long time. Like, yeah, in my mid-40s, everyone around me was starting with reading glasses, yeah, and I was like, I'm fine.
You're fine.
And then I had this delusion that somehow I would always be fine. But yeah, it's starting to catch up with me. And it's annoying because it's not just reading, but it's also distance. Like, the range of what is non-blurry is is shrinking, you know?
Right.
I take pleasure in everyday activities.
Often.
Often, yeah. I feel joy from moment to moment.
Often.
I have a sense of meaning and purpose in my life.
Often.
I have a lot of energy.
Often. Yeah.
I feel best when I'm giving to others.
Often.
I can find the good even in a difficult situation.
Often.
It's interesting because, and of course, the test isn't necessarily giving us how they came up with these questions, but I think it measures at least two different things, these kinds of questions. You know, I find the good even in a difficult situation. That measures both privilege and mindset, right? Yeah. There is a thing called resilience and also just your own narrative, your own choices. There are people who are more open to experience, who are just generally less neurotic, less scared and angry and upset. And so there are personality traits that are different. There are different approaches. You know, there are some people who had pretty bad circumstances and yet are resilient and optimistic. Why does that happen? It's hard to know. Yeah. But, you know, a question like that, it's like, you know, I can find the good even in a difficult situation. Like for me, I can say, yeah, often, if not always, because, I don't know, my life has always been pretty good. But maybe my life has always been pretty good because that's just how I look at it. Or I take life by the horns and actually direct it in the direction that I needed to go. Now, undoubtedly, I've experienced a tremendous amount of luck. You just being born in Seattle. And so it's a measure of that privilege and that luck, but also of optimism, you know, which I've always been. I remember when I was young, I recognized that I was different from some other people in that when I thought about my life, if there was like a bell curve of like, or a graph, you know, XY graph of time versus quality of life, the line was always going up, which is kind of impossible because if you have an amazing year when you're 12 years old, for example, and you go, but then I turned 13 and then it was amazing. And then I turned 14 and it was even more amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, maybe that's just how I narrativize my life. But I remember really noticing that not everyone saw it that way.
See, for me, it's a mix because like a mix of what you were saying of, I mean, I had some really bad, unfortunate situations. And I think the people around me, especially my dad, but also other relatives, helped me see the good in things, which gave me tools for them. I became someone, either a combination of genetics and that I can see the good even in bad situations. And I'm lucky in that sense that I've been able to have that outlook. Mm-hmm. But also, I've also been very blessed. In spite of all the bad things that did happen to me, I've also had a ridiculous amount of good things that have happened to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there could be a kid who grew up on your street who experienced very similar circumstances, but for whatever reason went down a personality path that led to a locus of control not being within themselves, where they felt just a leaf in the wind and a consequence of their circumstances and had no control. Whereas my impression of you is that you, even as a child, felt like you were driving the bus.
Yeah.
Right?
A little too much.
Number 10, I welcome and accept my feelings throughout any given day. I welcome.
Yeah, always.
Always. I actively keep in touch with friends and family.
Oh, man, that one's hard. I mean, I do, but Like, it's definitely not always. Is it often? I would say sometimes.
When things are tough, I reach out for support.
Sometimes. We've talked about this. I'm getting better about it. But. Yeah.
So that's an interesting one, because if you are avoidant,
yeah,
like you and me, Berto, in that direction, attachment-wise, meaning that we have pathological independence tendencies, then when things are tough, you tend not to reach out for support. And avoidant individuals will report more happiness and more optimism than others, because they're not really aware. They're not really thinking about things, because they're cut off from their emotions. You know, sort of like how you were in the beginning of therapy.
Right.
If your therapist had asked you how you're doing, you'd be
I was happy.
Yeah, you'd be happy. Like, everything's fine, but everything was not fine. You know what I mean?
And that's still true. I mean, yeah, it's just, I guess it's at different levels.
Yeah.
It's a difference between, oh, wow, I am actually literally depressed, versus like, okay, yeah, maybe I still don't always acknowledge my needs and my emotions.
Right. So self-reported happiness, even when you're taking a test like this, I suppose you'd have to ask questions like, how often, I mean, really, a question that I would, if I were to ask someone, I was trying to gauge their general happiness level, I would ask them, how often are you sad, hurt, or scared and afraid, and tell other people about it? Mm-hmm. Because if they're like, oh, never.
Well, that's, yeah.
And they think they're telling me how happy they are.
Right.
But that would sound like a lot of unmet needs, because your life will always have a lot of pain and a lot of fear. Right.
And that, I would have said never back when.
Right.
And now I can only say sometimes.
Yeah, right. I feel grateful for what I have.
Always. Yeah. Always.
I let go of past disappointments or hurts.
Sometimes.
Okay. So let's submit.
Yeah. Oh, is that it? Okay.
Where do you think you're at given these?
I feel like
questions?
I didn't do as high on this one.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it was from 0 to 100, I maybe put myself at, well, still 60, but the other one was up to 72. So I'd say like 70 out of 100.
They say that you are happier than average.
Oh.
You're above average.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, and when we get back, let's go over some research. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
All right, we're back from the break. Let's do an OPP, Berto. What do you say?
OPP.
So these people became patrons all the way back in 2020 and have stayed patrons through thick and thin.
Nice.
We have Elizabeth from God knows where. We have Holiday in Missoula, upper tier patron. Ooh. We have Moni Mond from Deutschland, I believe.
Nice.
We have Brianna from New York. We have Kat from Maryland. We have Hilaria from annual patron. Hilaria from God knows where. Andre from Quebec.
Oh.
Zulima from God knows where. T-Bay from God knows where. Kelly from God knows where. Steen from God knows where. Victoria from God knows where.
Lots of God knows where.
Up to your patron, Threat Level Midnight.
Ooh, I've seen those comments. I've seen comments from that.
From Missouri. Nice. I think that's a reference to a movie.
Yeah, it must be.
Like a spoof movie or something.
Threat Level Midnight.
We have Lane from Tempe, Arizona. Chandra from Scottsdale, Arizona. Maybe they know each other. Margie from Kansas. Good old Kansas, which is where my mom's from. Thomas from Phoenix, Arizona. Another Arizona. We have Zayu from Saskatchewan. Saskatoon. We have Angie from Michigan, I believe, and Chris from BC, Canada.
Nice.
We have Camille from London, Kimmy from London, and Aaron from Luxembourg.
Nice.
Caleb from Florida, Tiffany from Minnesota, and Madeline from Greensboro, North Carolina. Thank you so much for being a patron and staying a patron through thick and thin. Seriously. So let's look at some more research. Tough or bluff, Berto? Spending money on a time-saving purchase, like paying for a tax accountant or buying nice containers to organize things or ordering Grubhub, makes us happier than spending money on material things like new clothes and a new car. Tough or bluff?
Well, I'm going to go tough in general, but you know, you really got to double click on the details there, because I've been very happy from some material purchases, but I would say overall, I'm going to go tough.
I've noticed you started saying this phrase, double clicking on things.
Yeah.
Is that some weird corporate BS speech that is emerging out of your weird world?
Well, so what happens is...
Is this the new synergy of 2023?
So as you know, tarantula wasps are extremely dangerous animals. And so we have to have certain language when we're describing how we handle them. You have to double click the jar to make sure it's sealed properly. That's where the terminology comes from.
I don't know if I like it. Plus, I don't even understand the meaning of it.
Because, you know, you have the lid, right? So you go click.
Oh, by the way, so it was tough. You were right.
Okay.
These results suggest that using money to buy time can protect people from detrimental effects of time pressure on life satisfaction.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because when you think about, and some of the questions on the quizzes were along those lines.
That's true.
And when I think about for myself, you know, and I've talked about it ad nauseum, so I won't go into detail again, but I've been feeling a lot of time pressure lately.
Yeah.
Like things that are just, you would think, so you don't even have time to do that? Like, I went to the dentist a couple weeks ago, and they told me that my back molars show signs that I'm grinding, and it's starting to pull the bone away from my teeth, which means that I could start losing more of my teeth in the back because of this. But I wear a mouth guard, but it's a really old mouth guard that I've kind of chewed down.
Okay, and so you need a new one.
So I need to just make a new one. It probably takes me 7 minutes to make a new mouth guard.
Wait, what? How?
Well, I use the old school ones where I used from football as a kid.
Oh.
You just boil a plastic mouth guard and then you put it in your mouth and then it molds to your mouth. There's an art form to it. Like it's hard to get it right.
But you have the experience.
But I've done it and I mess up sometimes, but you know, I usually manage. And it's sitting right behind you, Berto. The mouth guard blank. And, you know,
I was putting that in my mouth earlier.
I don't want to lose my molars, and I yet have had, it's been 2 weeks. I haven't had any time in my day because there's always 10 million other things that are, and sometimes I just want to sit with my wife and watch TV, you know, so I don't want to be constantly doing something productive. So when we were taking those quizzes, and by the way, I would have answered very similar to that other quiz.
Yeah.
I was thinking, the major impingement on my well-being and happiness is the time constraint.
Right.
And so this research showing that spending money on time-saving activities makes us happier than spending money on material things. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. And it kind of orients my mind a little bit more, you know, like, well, how could I spend money to save even more time maybe, right?
Right. And it helps you double click on your emotional status.
God damn it. Tougher bluff. Regarding sex frequency, couples double click on their happiness. Sorry.
A lot.
Couples are happiest at once a month. So regarding sex frequency, couples are happiest at once per month. Tougher bluff.
Bluff. Although this seems like it would vary drastically between based on couples.
Totally.
Longevity and age and all this. But I'm still going to go bluff. I'm going to go like maybe, let's just say twice a month.
Yeah. This is literally every couple of every age of every sexual orientation. So yeah, you're right. Bluff on average. Relationship satisfaction peaks at once per week.
Once per week. Okay, good.
But on average, satisfaction doesn't increase if they have sex more often than that.
Yeah.
That's bad, but it plateaus.
But I do think that you know, I feel like, as we were just talking about time, I only have so much time in my life. If, you know, when you're younger or starting a relationship or whatever, like, go at it, man. But after a while, I'm like, I don't have to have it all every 5 minutes. You know, there's other things I need to be doing with my time.
Well, so you're saying you don't have an extra 4 minutes in the day that you could have sex with your wife?
With my wife. Oh, that's different.
That was a joke about longevity of lasting that you either picked up on and riffed on or just completely went over your head. And actually,
I just accepted that that's how long it takes. Yeah. So, you know.
Tougher bluff. When people see faces in everyday objects like clouds or pastries, they tend to see a happy young man. So this doesn't have to do with your happiness. But when people see faces, and there's a word for this, it's some sort of cognitive bias. Tectolalia or something, but it's when you see a face in a cloud or a patient. When people see a face,
okay,
they tend to see a happy young man. Tough or bluff?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go bluff only because of my own experience. When I see faces in wall patterns, carpets, things, I always see weird monsters, older people, all those sorts of stuff. Not happy young men.
Interesting. It's tough, actually. Oh, when asked to identify what they saw, participants thought 75% of the faces were young adults. 91% were male, and the most frequent emotion was happiness.
I mean, I could have a hypothesis that a lot of times the shapes might not have long hair in its shapiness. And also, I could theorize that maybe we just, you know, spotting a smiling mouth might be something we're very tuned to or something. But still, I'm a little surprised based on my own experience.
Yeah, it is kind of weird because obviously we'd be attuned to danger emotions, like someone that's angry or someone that's sad.
Right? Yeah, but what's funny about that is that the caricature of anger isn't really at all what it looks like when someone's angry.
Yeah. But still, that...
And mouth-wise. The eyebrows, yes.
Yeah.
You know?
But when they're asking people,
yeah,
they're just like, what emotion? Just blank, yeah, open-ended. Like, what emotion, yeah, sure, do you see? They're like, happiness.
Happy, yeah.
Not just blank or,
yeah,
or whatever.
Man, that is so...
And 91% of the time, they're like, I see a male.
Yeah.
Which is... And a young male, 75% is a young person. Why do you think that is?
Like I said, I think that the male part might be because it's easier to see like a circle with some detail inside than to see a circle with detail inside and a frame of something that looks like hair. Just statistically, I bet you that there's more circles out there without a frame. And then as far as the happiness, yeah, again, I'm just saying like, you know, a little slanty line. It just has to be slightly slanty for us to be like, yeah, they're kind of smiling. But it could also be something about, it could be a religious implication too. You know, like
Jesus
or God or something smiling, yeah, down.
Yeah. And another speculation is that the young adult male is the default human, you know, because of the privilege that, sure, we have in our society.
Sure.
When you think of a human being, like, and there's a lot of studies around this, people think of a man.
Yeah.
Because that is what our culture talks about. We talk about men, and then when we're talking about humans, we're mainly talking about men. When we're talking about the power structure, we're mainly talking about men. And then when we're talking about women, we have to designate them as, sure, women. It's like, you know, you have soccer and then you have women's soccer.
Right.
You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Tough or bluff, telling a happy story makes people feel closer to you than telling a sad story. Tough or bluff?
I'm going to go bluff on this one. I'm going to say you actually, you know, this is one of the presentation techniques that they teach you is try to tell a story that's real as possible, but what that will elicit emotion. And of course, you can tell a happy one, but I feel like the sad one might grip people a little bit more. So if I'm telling someone a happy story, they might feel feelings of jealousy or of like, well, okay, well, cool, but now everyone had a good time or something. But if I tell them a sad story, they'll feel a combination of schadenfreude, where it's lucky they weren't the ones to suffer, and empathy.
Yeah, that's the assumption. And I'd have to look more into the method, but it's actually tough. You're wrong in that.
I'm wrong.
Telling a happy story, according to this study, made people feel closer to you than telling a sad story.
Then I've been doing it wrong all my life.
But I would also say that there's a lot of at least anecdotal experience and a lot of wisdom that points in the direction of if you want to bond, if two people are going to bond by both telling a sad story, a meaningful, difficult story, it reveals vulnerability and that you trust the other person, you can relate to, you know, everyone knows that one person in their life that is constantly talking about positive things, and it's just hard to get close to those people, hard to relate to them.
That's true. At the same time, as I think about my relationship with my friends, especially people I don't see that frequently, like in Colombia and things like that, it is true that most of the stories we tell are like positive, fond memories we have together. Yeah. Or they'll be telling me about things that happened when I wasn't there. But generally, it's fun stuff. And now that I think about it, if we were all just like, and then this other terrible thing happened,
yeah,
that might be a bummer.
Yeah, I guess it just really depends on the when you think, and when you put it in that context, if you just code every moment where someone is telling a story in a relationship, then yeah, if most of the time you're saying depressing stories, then you're an Eeyore.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna be like, hey, how's it going? Well, let me tell you.
Yeah. Everything's negative. Tougher bluff. We tend to accurately identify screams of pain, fear, anger, frustration, surprise, but not happiness, which gets interpreted as fear instead. Tougher bluff.
Screams?
So, yeah, we tend to accurately identify in the lab when they show, you know, people screaming in pain or screaming in fear, screaming in anger, screaming in frustration, screaming in surprise, or screaming with happiness. They identify everything pretty well except for screams happiness. Of, you know, outbursts of happiness, like, ha, 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 you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And these things tend to get interpreted as
I'm
going to
go tough on that because I think... It's just not that common for people to scream in happiness.
Well, yeah, it's tempting to focus on that, but you'd have to hear, which I hadn't.
Okay.
They took from movies. So these are people acting happy. Sure. So they're not like, don't think of the word scream because you would never think of someone screaming.
Well, but I'm even thinking of like a Pretty Woman when she goes to reach for the thing and the lid closes and she goes, ah!
Right. You know? So think about
Or those. Amadeus when he goes, ah!
Yeah.
It's just the same sound effect in all the movies.
Yeah. So you're saying, yeah, it is tough. Participants listened to screams from movies intended to correctly identify all emotions, but misinterpreted happiness as fear.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of weird when you think about it, right?
But I could see it because, you know, I'm thinking of like a child. When you are playing peekaboo with a child or doing something surprising with a child, part of what they're feeling is fear. It's just a careful, guided fear. You know, it's like you're safe, but it's a little scary.
Right.
You know,
it's and a controlled fear.
So when they're like, ah!
Yeah.
Which is the same sound effect in Amadeus.
Yeah. I mean, I would wonder about this because just hearing the lab research study involved just listening to probably just like a second of audio and you would hear a second of someone in surprise, right? Like, oh, and it just seems like it'd be hard to delineate between surprise and fear, but somehow people tended to accurately identify except for happiness. So I guess I'd really just have to hear what that was. And also maybe happiness isn't one of those things that tends to be exclaimed in a short burst of vocalization, you know?
Yeah.
And they probably didn't include laughter because that's pretty obvious. Right. Anyway, I don't know. That's just kind of a weird one. Tougher bluff. People are more happy if they perceive their income, education, and occupation to be better than others. Tougher bluff. So regardless of how much income, how much education, and how good their job is, as long as they think of themselves as better than others, they are happy.
Yeah. It's tough, sadly, but I do believe it's tough because I think there's just like this weird advantage as an animal to make sure you're the one not getting caught by the hyena. So as long as I'm running slightly faster than the other deer, then I'm safe. And it sucks. It sucks for poor Bob. You know, Bob the deer was a great deer, but I'm just slightly faster. And I'm not the fastest deer out there, but I'm still alive. And so that thing, I think it's sadly tough.
Yeah, it is tough. And it's shown in societal trends that are pretty obvious to see. Like you go to a country, a community in the world that is suffering from a lot of poverty and a lot of disadvantage where they don't even have fresh water, for example.
Right.
And you'll see, and you'll ask people how happy they are. There's a lot of people that are totally happy. You give that situation to a community in the United States where they don't, and there are people in the United States who don't have access to fresh water right now, drinking water. They will talk about 24/7 misery.
Yeah.
And so it's all about, you know, relativism, which is interesting to think about, right? Because the people who might have it all, right? They have all the money and all the safety and all the privilege and the healthcare and everyone loves them and they have a lot of things to entertain themselves.
But their
themselves.
Yacht's not the largest in the bay.
But compared to, so it almost makes you want to make sure you're always living in a neighborhood in which you're the richest house in the block, regardless of what income you have, you know what I mean?
Or change your outlook about humanity.
Right. yeah, you know what I mean? You just move it, you move into some you move into so some bad. Slum and you just like
that's right. I'm, just get I'm this, living it up.
You just get this giant mansion. You know what
oh
I mean?
Oh my gosh.
You're just like, I have it all.
And then they all break into your house and you're like, oh, wait.
Hey, that's discrimination. Yeah, it's tough. The researchers found that people with higher subjective socioeconomic status reported higher levels of subjective well-being. This relationship was stronger than the connection between people's objective socioeconomic status and well-being. The researchers also found that the effect of social comparison was stronger in areas with higher population density, possibly owing to a greater competition for resources in more densely populated areas.
Well, I could totally see that. You can imagine you live out in a farm with a, you know, a reasonable sized land. And sure, Joey over there has 3 more acres, but it's far. And you're mostly day to day just busy with your cows and your things. Whereas instead you live like several apartments side by side and every day you see what comes in and out and who what they're talking about. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Let's take a break. When we get back, let's do more of these. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right, we're back from the break. Tougher bluff, Berto. Mortgages or credit card debt reduce happiness, but student debt doesn't reduce happiness.
Hmm. Whoa. That seems odd, considering how much people gripe about student debt. So I'm going to go bluff. All debt reduces happiness.
Oh, interesting. It is bluff, but it's the opposite in that student loans, according to this really large U.S. study, I actually looked because it sounded very weird to me that... Because you would think student loan debt would cause less decrease in happiness because you know
getting what, education.
Yeah, it's an investment, right? Whereas a mortgage and credit card debt, we all understand, especially credit card.
Credit card, especially. Because the mortgage, at least you could be like, well, I got a house. Or
yeah, and you have equity, right? Like if
you, in a car loan, you could at least be like, well, this is the thing I'm driving.
Right.
But a credit card just sits there.
Yeah, credit card, it's usually just little things that you... Like, couldn't afford in the moment, you know what I mean? And it credit card debt usually really hangs over your head. It seems like mortgage and student loan would be in that same category where it's, you know, it's like an investment. But for whatever reason, they found that student loans reduce happiness the most and mortgages and credit cards don't reduce happiness at all. Which, again, large U.S. study, 2021, pretty good methodology.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, pretty weird. And so this is on average, of course. But I wonder what was going on there.
Hmm.
You know, I could see there being some confounds, like if you were looking at a lot of younger people, because people who have student loans tend to be younger on average, probably, right?
Yeah.
And if you're younger, you probably haven't been able to put your student loan or your degree to good use yet. So you're probably still kind of, and student loans can be
huge.
They could be enormously oppressive. I mean, you could have a student loan of like $200,000. I mean, we actually gave a scholarship to a student that had a student loan of $250,000.
And
she found out the hard way, which she didn't know prior, that at least at the time, the government caps you out at $250,000.
Oh my gosh.
So she thought she was going to get another check from the loan department to pay for tuition the next month. And she found out that she wasn't going to get any money. And so she was going to have to drop out of her doctorate program.
Oh my God.
And our scholarship actually gave her the ability to last longer.
That's crazy.
Because she was pretty close to graduation. But
well, because I think the student loans are way more abstract. You're giving all this money. And, you know, of course, you're getting the education, and in theory, that means you're going to get the job that in theory is going to help you pay down the thing. That's a lot of levels of abstraction.
Right.
As opposed to like, where did this money go? Oh, yeah, I'm driving in it. Or where is, oh, I'm living in it. That's the roof over my head. The credit card, I could see, but still, maybe because credit cards are just like, everyone's got one, everyone's got it. Maybe it's more normal. And I know everyone's got, or a lot of people have student loans, but still. You know, the other thing with the credit card is usually you did buy things. So you're like, well, I mean, I did go to dinner.
Yeah. Or I did get that broom that I needed.
Yeah. But yeah, it's still surprising, though.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wonder if you actually looked more in detail if you found that in the lifespan, because, well, the other thing here is, again, this is averages, and there are a fair amount of people who go into tremendous student debt for a degree and they never use the degree, or the degree never makes them much money. And that would be pretty miserable.
That's really bad.
You know, like you can imagine 7 years after graduation.
Yeah.
And you had a bachelor or a master's in something that you might have been passionate about, but you didn't really think about looking into how lucrative
money. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're like, well, the memory of all that knowledge and experience is starting to fade, but the interest is still building.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, because I have seen that a lot. I have seen a fair amount of people who get really wrapped up in academia.
Right.
And because there's not a lot of stop gaps. There's not a lot of people who will say, well, wait. So you understand that this degree, although you're into it and everyone around you is into it, your professors are into it.
Right.
There is a chance that this degree post-graduation will literally get you no money. And if that, you know, like a master's in fine arts degree,
right.
You know, it's not usual that you're going to become a professional poet, for example, right?
Yeah.
And so most people understand that they going into it. But, you know, I've met people who they get into it and they just figure, well, you know, something will work out, or they're not oriented that way.
Well, you're not even thinking about it because the plan is laid out before you unquestionably. Like, you go to high school. If you're going to college, you're going to college.
Right.
And you're paying for it and you're getting a degree. Right. And then you're getting a job.
Education is always a good idea, right?
Right.
And it's like, no. You know, some degrees are basically just like...
Fun if you want to do it and have the money.
Yeah. It's basically like edutainment.
Yeah.
You like learning, which is great.
Yeah.
But...
There's like a doctor's degree or a lawyer's degree.
Yeah.
By the way, it's very telling. You remember
there's no such thing as a doctor's degree. You mean a medical degree.
Oh, whatever, Mr. Doctor. So you remember the movie The Firm with Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's very telling in that
movie. He does a lot of running in that movie.
He always does a lot of running.
Yeah, yeah.
In that movie, he joins this law firm. And one of the main perks they offer him right off the bat is they pay off his student loans.
Mm.
And it's presented as like, by the way, and he's so happy in that scene.
Yeah, golly.
Especially a lawyer, right? Like a big
time
lawyer from a big university. That must have been expensive.
Yeah, yeah. And there are programs for therapists along those lines if you work in a particular community like Northwest. What was that one TV show called?
North by Northwest.
No, the TV show.
The movie with Cary Grant?
No, the TV show.
Northern Exposure.
Northern Exposure, yeah. Joel, wasn't it Dr. Joel?
Something? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, did you see the most recent episode of The Last of Us?
Oh, yes.
When they run into an old couple in a cabin?
Yep.
I think that woman was from Northern Exposure.
Oh, okay.
I think she was the receptionist in Northern Exposure.
Oh, interesting.
Man, that scene was so funny.
So hilarious.
I was laughing my ass off.
Very good.
He's like, you gave him soup?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I gave him soup.
Yeah. It's like, and then he's like, tell me where we are, and you better say the same thing she says. Like, did you lie? No. Are you lying to me now? No.
God, it was just so funny.
Yeah, so good.
By the way, if we haven't talked about it or we don't get a chance to, the first three episodes of Last of Us, I think, are three of the best things that have ever been made for movies and TV. Those first three episodes, and I'm not a zombie movie person, and I've never played The Last of Us, the video game. I'm not a zombie video game person. But those first three episodes were just a chef's kiss. Elementary school age children who nap at midday perform better academically, but are not happier. Elementary school age children who nap at midday, so we're talking fourth graders, napping at midday, perform better academically, but they are not happier.
Interesting. I am going to go tough. They do perform better academically. They're more refreshed. Their brain gets a little... But I could almost see it being the inverse. They're happier, although they don't do as well because they're a little foggier when they wake up. But I'm going to stick to my tough.
It's bluff. They perform better. They do.
And they're happier.
And they're happier.
Nice.
And they have fewer behavioral problems.
That's great. Why don't we nap?
Because we're an idiot society that doesn't follow the science.
It's even worse than that. We made fun of the Mexican siestas.
Yeah.
those lazy Mexicans with their siestas. Yeah. Whereas when I grew up in Colombia, when I was little, the generation before me had they didn't call them siestas, but they had naps. And they went home for lunch. And they had family time for lunch.
What a concept. But Berto, that doesn't have any overt benefit to the
line does not go up.
To the stockholders, yeah. Setting life goals just out of reach keeps you happier. Tougher bluff. Just out of reach instead of far out of reach.
Tough. I think that if you set goals that are too far, you never reach them and then you're unhappy.
Oh, sorry. There are three different versions. There's attainable goals.
Yeah.
Goals that are just out of reach, like you're trying to lose weight and you kind of think, well, I want to lose 20 pounds, but you set your goal at 25 pounds.
Right.
So you have attainable, which is 15. You have unattainable, but just slightly out of reach, 25. And then you have very much unattainable.
Yeah, I'm going to say the middle one, slightly beyond. It's just like a video game. We're talking about video games. If the video game's too easy, then it's not as rewarding. If you're always like, there's one more challenge, I can't. Even if you don't get 100% in the video game. That's my, so I'm going with that.
But it's out of reach.
It is out of reach.
Yeah, you're never going to be.
But it's not impossible.
Right. So it's bluff. Researchers found that those who felt their goals were more attainable at the beginning of the study reported greater well-being 2 and 4 years later.
Oh, it's not the middle one. They need to be attainable.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then that might be why I suck at goal setting.
Well, now, that doesn't measure if the individuals actually achieved their goals. It just measured how happy they were.
How happy they were, okay.
Yeah. Tougher bluff, women are better than men at reading happiness in others, if we think of gender as binary. Women, because that's usually all the research considers the gender binary. Women are better than men at reading happiness in others.
I want to go bluff on that just because, I mean, I could make something up about like, well, a mom has to like be quickly attuned to the baby's happiness, maybe, but I'm going to say bluff.
Why?
Because
You seem like upset or
something.
Yeah,
well, first of all, I think I'm very good at reading people's emotions anyways. But I'd say humans in general need to be highly attuned social animals. And you need to be able to tell in either case how someone's feeling.
Right.
So I'm going to go bluff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's bluff. Research has found that women and men are the same when it comes to reading emotions, anger, fear, happiness, and sadness in other people, except that women are better at reading disgust.
Oh, really? Okay, that's surprising.
Yeah. And it's like, why would that be, do you think?
I mean, I could, again, make something up like, they were picking the berries. So you need to make sure if someone tastes the berry, they're quickly like, oh, you're disgusted by it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I could also take a different angle, which is that, again, this is the kind of thing that you used to poke holes at me about, but I'm just going to say.
Well, speculation is fine.
Speculation, okay.
Putting your flag down as this is the way that it is.
This is how it is.
Then we're going to have an issue.
The monkeys are out hunting, okay? If you're out hunting and you stub your toe and your face makes slight disgusting look, the other monkeys can't stop hunting, so they need to kind of ignore your disgust.
Okay. That's a speculation. That's
cool. It's the way it is.
Yeah. Tougher bluff. Although Hillary Clinton supporters were sad after the 2016 election, on average, they returned to baseline happiness after 6 months. Tougher bluff.
I mean, I'm surprised it took 6 months, but I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt and go tough. I don't remember us still all in tears or something a long time afterwards. So, I'm going to go tough.
It's bluff. For the first time, supporters of the losing candidate did not return to baseline happiness 6 months after the election.
Okay. I said corrected.
Because, one, Trump was particularly,
I forgot about that little detail.
aggravating.
That's true. I was thinking about it, though, because I was thinking about it more in terms of the whole, like, the election was stolen thing. Like, there was some of that at first, like, oh, but she won the popular vote. And technically, Bernie should have been there was a lot of that. But then, I don't remember, keep going, but you're absolutely right that,
No, I remember people being very affected. Some people even triggered their trauma for months after.
Fair enough. All right.
Tougher bluff, research has found that happiness levels remain fixed after the age of 45.
Fixed?
On average.
That's gotta be a bluff. There's no way. There's so much life changes. Then you start decreasing your health. You start, no. You know, like I just talked to So one of my, what is the daughter of, okay, so not my cousin, but the second cousin, because she is like my dad's age.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what do you call those?
Let's get into the detail.
But what do you call those? I'm curious.
Oh,
is that a second cousin?
Wait, so start over?
Okay. You know when you have a cousin, but it's actually your dad's cousin?
Cousin once removed.
Okay. My cousin once removed.
First cousin once removed.
Her mom just died.
Okay.
She was 90. She died of old age.
Or you could just say your dad's cousin. I mean, that's easier.
But the point is, out of all this long story, recently she told my aunt that she just wanted to die. And she didn't say it like, she didn't have cancer or something. Well, she was just old and tired. And she said that every day she just didn't have anything to do and she just wanted to die.
Yeah.
So I think of that, and not everyone's like that or anything, but I do think there's no way it stays steady after 45.
So what is the graph in your head, do you think?
In my mind, it goes, you're happy at first, then you have this steep decline towards your late 20s, and then it starts climbing back up in your late 40s, and then it stabilizes for a while, and then it starts dropping off again after your 70s.
Yeah, I would say that's the common wisdom, right? That you are sad throughout your teenage years.
Yeah.
And then once you kind of get into your late 20s, 30s, you get more control over your life, and you're still healthy usually. And so you
something
get,
like that.
Yeah, and then you get old, and then everything goes to shit. But it is almost the direct opposite
really?
of what you're saying. So, and there's a lot of ways of looking at this, but there's been a lot of studies demonstrating that the happiness curve is U-shaped, meaning that we start off...
Me-shaped?
We start off fairly happy.
Yeah.
It decreases starting at age 18.
Okay.
It's lowest at 45.
Oh, my God.
So it's the opposite of what you're saying. And then at 50, it increases the rest of our life.
Oh, well, there you go.
I mean, that's on average.
On average.
Of course. So why do you think that is? Why do you think
that happens? Well, a lot of it has to do with kids. Because you would think, you know, having kids, you know, makes you happy. But it's also very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of money and time and stress. You're also like, those years are the busiest working years of your life generally.
And you put yourself in the back burner.
Yeah. So that's probably why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also this stat is a bit of a interesting one where I bet you there's also a weird U shape depending on which part of the world you're talking about. Like there must be some communities where this is more true than others. Like the kind of thing I would imagine is that there are some places and communities in the world where you have to work nonstop till you basically die. And so you might never have that final you part,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
whereas like in communities where you do tend to retire and, you know, maybe.
But it is interesting that on average that after 50, even though health decline is frequent and common, and even though you're still working, people tend to work well into their 70s these days, that you're getting happier and happier and happier. The other thing is, why does everyone have it so wrong? You know, because your assumption is what I would think 90% of people assume, right?
Well, you also hear us old folk complain a lot.
Well, I think if I was just to speculate about the teenage misconception, because we're generally happy throughout, you know, on average throughout, we have some of our happiest years 0 to 18.
Right.
Because we don't have any responsibilities on average.
Yeah.
And this notion that somehow teenagers are inherently unhappy is, I think, born out of perspective from the parents. Because if you're a parent,
they look grumpy.
The kids look grumpy. They don't want to hang out with you anymore. They talk back. So to you as a parent, your kids are miserable, but they might actually be the same level of happiness. They're just pushing back more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's interesting.
Yeah. And another thing I think is it privileges youth. The assumption that somehow old people are always miserable. That some, like, how could you possibly get happier as you go into your 60s, 70s, and 80s? Like, that's a miserable time of life. Aren't they just sitting around complaining about the fact they're not 25 anymore? Yeah. I mean, isn't that what old people do? And so there's just a lot of misconception. Also, when we have health problems, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're less happy. It might even galvanize our efforts to draw boundaries in ways that we weren't doing before.
Yeah.
We might be like, well, I can't do that thing anymore, and I never wanted to anyway, and now I have an excuse. You know, I got limited years left on this planet. I'll be goddamned if I'm going to spend it doing that one stupid thing that I've been doing all this time.
You definitely get more selfish with your time as you go, because at least I have, and I could see that being sort of common, where you're like, listen, No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So according to statistics, Berto, if we're average, which I don't know if we are, you and I are at the lowest point yes. of our happiness curve.
Yeah.
We were happier before, and we're only going to get happier later.
That's a good thing.
I know. You know, and I could see that being true. For me, I think it's circumstantial, but for me, I don't know. I think I've been pretty happy, pretty consistently happy my whole life. But I do think that I'm heading into if I can configure my life to be more rational when it comes to time, I predict next year I will be a lot better with my time by the end of this year, by the end of 2023, and I will be a lot happier. I'll be more fulfilled. When we look at all this research and I think about my life and I think about being happier, I don't know if I've really identified that. You know, I've talked a lot about this time management thing, but I think the one angle is like well-being, you know, just a feeling of like, I like the way my life is, which makes me a lot more motivated to get this under control.
Yeah.
Trevor Bluff, in the U.S., people were happier 40 years ago.
Self-reported.
Right.
40 years ago was the 80s.
Mm-hmm. 83.
I'm going to go Bluff, actually, because I have this idyllic notion of the 80s. But I bet you it's not. So I'm going to go Bluff.
Right. Bluff. We're about the same. Although teens are a little happier today and older people are a little less happy today.
Okay.
But not by a significant margin. People are generally as happy as they were 40 years ago, which is interesting because you usually think of happiness as always declining over time. Right. And that everything in the past was idyllic.
And you would have thought that the older people in the 80s would have been like, oh no, this isn't as good as the 50s, so I'm really unhappy.
Yeah. Now, the pandemic, obviously, there was a decrease during the pandemic for everybody, for every age, and everyone around the earth. But we don't know if that will last. Time will tell if that will have a long-lasting effect. I'm guessing that it will, but we'll see. Trevor Bluff, having an advanced degree is not associated with greater mental well-being.
Trevor Bluff. Oh, actually... Well, so I do know that there's been research about dementia being lower risk if you've had higher education. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going to... And was this one that it is beneficial?
Having an advanced degree is not associated with greater...
Okay. So I'm going to go Bluff. I think it is.
Tough. It is not.
Oh, it isn't. Okay. Yeah.
So having there's a lot of benefits to having an advanced degree, a graduate degree, or a doctorate degree. And that's a doctorate, Berto, not a doctor degree. But having greater mental well-being is not one of them. Unhappy married couples are more likely to gain weight. Trevor Bluff.
Unhappy, more weight. I'm going to go Bluff on that. If anything, there might be an inverse correlation. But
why?
Meaning like not inverse correlation, but the other way, where couples that struggle with their weight might be more unhappy. But I don't think that unhappier couples, or at the very least, it might be correlated but not causal. So I'm still going to go Bluff.
Okay. Because, you know, the thought would be that if your marriage isn't going well, you might eat to cope or to pass the time.
No, because if it's not going well, you actually need to get in shape because you might need to look for another partner.
Right. Well, the speculation that they have, so it is Bluff. But the speculation they have is they found that happier couples in a relationship, they eat more together.
Yeah.
and celebrate more with food. You know what I mean?
And drink.
Yeah, right. Trevor Bluff. Realists are happy, which is definitely the case with me, me and my wife. It's like whenever we want to have fun date night or something, it's definitely a cheat day. Trevor Bluff. Realists are happier than pessimists or optimists. Realists are happier than either optimists or pessimists.
That's interesting. I could see that. I'm going to go tough. My thinking is, okay, certainly a pessimist is always just like, oh, gosh, it's just not going to go well. So, and then an optimist could be disappointed often. So, yeah, I'm going to go tough.
Yeah, it is tough. There's speculation as to why this is. But, you know, another thing I could say is that you could think of optimists as being maybe a little more let down when their optimism is not met. You know what I mean? Whereas realists are more satisfied with what actually happens because they're more in line. They expect what will probably happen, and then right. that thing happens, and then they're like, yeah, that's fine. Smiling and appearing happy in photos makes you look 2 years older. Total bluff.
2 years older? smile. I don't know. That didn't used to be true for me, but maybe now it is. I'm going to go bluff. Smiling makes you look younger.
It's tough. Smiling and looking really? Happy in photos makes people look older.
So I'm going to start growling.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense. No. But, you know, I told this to my wife and she's like, well, you know, when you smile, you have
get more wrinkles.
You get more wrinkles in your eyes.
Yeah.
Who knows? Younger people are more likely to associate happiness with excitement, but older people are more likely to associate happiness with peacefulness.
I could see that. I'm going to go tough because it's like if you're a kid and you're like, hey, you know, are you, we're doing something. And to them, it's like excitement means we're happy. But to an older person, it might be like, yeah, things are chill. I'm happy. So yes, I'm going to go tough.
Yeah, absolutely. For the reasons you said. Laughing at yourself makes you happier. Tougher bluff.
Yeah, tough. At least this is true for me.
Yeah.
Having a better
life. You must be a really happy person.
Yes. No, but it's true. Like, basically, that's been one of my techniques since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
That I am able to use humor. And maybe I also saw people in my family, and definitely my dad, using humor as a coping mechanism.
Yeah. It's tough. Absolutely. There are times in my life where I'm struggling with something. You know, like, say, there's a group of people on the internet that hate me and they're trying to
yeah.
get rid of my license, that kind of thing. And if I really just stew in the reality of it and the negativity of it, that's one thing. But if I just sort of laugh at myself and be like, well, I don't know, maybe I'm an idiot.
Right. You know?
And maybe I'll get canceled and I'll never be a podcaster again. I don't know. And maybe that means I move in with my parents. I don't know. It's just who, I don't know. What am I but a leaf in the wind? And it just feels, it's a releasal, you know, you just feel like,
right.
Why be so tightly wound around a particular outcome? Why can't you just laugh at yourself and say like, well, I guess maybe I'm stupid.
Well, and if you think about the converse, you could imagine someone being very unhappy if they're always sweating how everyone perceives them
yeah.
and what they're saying about them. And I can't think of anyone like that, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right, exactly, yeah. Tougher bluff. Friendship variables accounted for 38% of the variance in people's happiness. Friendship variables. So how close sure. you are, how many friends you have, that kind of thing.
And what percentage?
Accounted for 38% of the variance in people's happiness.
Oh, I mean, that's pretty good percentage. Yeah, I'm going to go tough. I mean, it might even be higher. I think friendships are important. Mm-hmm. So
it's bluff. It is higher. It's as high as 58%.
Well, okay.
So
yeah,
as a, I don't know. I don't like that tougher bluff because 38, 58, it's pretty, yeah. pretty close.
Yeah. But still, it's good. It's a good sign.
But I think that what I was getting at with this tougher bluff is like friendship is very important, is a very important factor in happiness to the point where almost 2/3 of your happiness might be attributable to your friends.
Yeah.
To your, you know, how many friends you have, the quality of friends you have, how often you hang out with your friends.
When they do all those longevity studies of the blue zones, and one of the most common things is that they're extremely social mm-hmm. and they're also exposed to young people, to kids and things like that. Because, you know, they usually live in smaller communities. The old folks are very active. They're outdoors a lot. They interact with each other and with the kids in the neighborhood. And that is associated with longevity. So, and that longevity, part of it is, you know, they feel better about themselves. They are healthier. All these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I totally buy it.
Higher education is associated with higher happiness, independent of income.
Well, no. I mean, from the earlier question, I guess now I'm going to go bluff. Bluff. It's higher education is not associated with overall happiness.
It is bluff. You're yeah. right. Tougher bluff. The longer the vacation, the happier you are after the trip.
This one's so tricky because I've had that where it's like, wow, I got to get back to reality. So I'm going to say bluff. I feel like you need shorter vacations.
Well, it's not looking at all vacations.
Yeah.
It's just like, how happy they just took one vacation.
Okay.
And the variable was the length of the vacation.
Oh, okay. So if it's just for that, then yes, sure. Tough, because it took you a long time to decompress, and then you finally started being just relaxed and everything. So fine, tough.
Right. And that is the common wisdom that a lot of people will say, but this is bluff.
Ah, darn it. You tricked me.
That regardless of the length of an individual trip, okay, the happiness was the same. So you can take... So if you're trying to increase happiness...
Okay.
And I think this is important to note, because a lot of times people will say like, well, yeah, I could take a 4-day vacation or a 3-day road trip.
But that's not enough to relax.
But that's not enough to get to be happy. Yeah. And the data shows on average that that's not true. You can take a 2-week vacation. And of course, there's a lot of other things involved with this, like the decompressing, or it's hard to take a 3-day vacation if you're going to Europe, for example.
Right.
But if you're trying to increase happiness, one of the things you might be focused, that you should focus on, is trying to have more vacations in your life and not relegating 2 weeks of vacation once a year. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Which I need to follow that advice, honestly. Spending money on oneself makes us more happy than spending money on others. Tough or bluff?
No, I mean... It depends. There are things that I love spending on myself, but I'm going to go bluff. I feel like a lot of times when you do something for someone you love, it makes you happier.
Exactly. You're right, bluff. During a vacation, we're happier than we were planning the vacation. So if you contrast when you're planning the vacation versus actually on the vacation, you're happier when... during a vacation, we're happier than when you're actually planning.
For me, that's totally tough because... planning vacations is stressful. There are so many variables. There's so many things, especially when other people are involved. Like I just got done planning, and I'm only about 80% done, planning a trip to Colombia and planning a trip through Orlando to Colombia with another family that's also got kids. And it's, you know, coordinating everything and where we're going to stay and getting the... And now Disney is like so complicated because you got to reserve the days and all these... Stress, 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 stress. So once I'm there, I'm going to relax.
You predict complete relaxation at Disneyland?
I'm going to be happier is what I mean.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's actually bluff. It's the opposite.
Really?
Research shows that we're... On average, we're happier. So I think what this points, if I was to just take a guess, I would say that the reason why, on average, people are happier planning a vacation than when they're on the vacation, because I would say for me, that's not the case at all. It's not the case for you. But I wonder if a lot of people are making bad choices with their vacations.
Oh, I see.
Where they are generally happy as they're thinking about doing X, Y, and Z, but when they actually... enact the vacation, it wasn't well thought out, or they were focusing on things that weren't actually going to make them happier.
Interesting.
It's just a guess that I have about
that. Could very well be.
Yeah,
I just, oh my gosh. I mean, part of it is also, I guess you actually are a planner by default. For me, I'm not. But vacations is something that I have no choice but to do because, and maybe this is telling, I have to. I hate badly planned vacations.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going on vacation if it's not.
Does your wife plan a lot?
No, I mean, sometimes, but I'm generally the vacation organizer.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Me too. And I actually really enjoy planning I actually really enjoy planning vacations. I like looking up various different things. I like going on Street View and looking around and planning things out. I don't like things to be rigidly planned, but I've been on enough vacations without having done any pre-planning to know that those kinds of vacations can really suck.
Yeah, because, I've had the same experience.
Yeah, because you can get to a location and then you're like trying to figure out where to go. You might ask around or something. And then you get back home and other people are like, oh my God, did you go here? And you're like, oh, I didn't even know about that.
Well, there's that. There's also actually that part of it is that, so I'm pretty good about flying by the seat of my pants and improvising. A lot of people aren't. So I suppose if it was just me going somewhere, maybe I'd be okay. Like, but so many times my vacations involve other people. And my experience has been that every time I didn't put enough time into it, I end up being more stressed during the thing because people are not getting what they thought they were going to do. And then I have to deal with like, oh, well, let's adjust this and that. And a lot of, and you know, and so that's more stressful. So yeah, I like planning and I'm happier when I'm on the vacation.
Crying makes us happier, tough or bluff?
Well, not in the moment, but in my experience, tough. Crying leads to happiness.
Mm-hmm. Tough, absolutely. When unhappy people watch TV shows about unhappy people, they become less happy. Tough or bluff? When unhappy people
right.
watch TV shows about unhappy people,
they become
More unhappy.
Yeah, yeah. No, bluff. Schadenfreude to the rescue. When a human sees another human struggling, you would think they'd be like, oh, God. But sadly, a lot of times they're like, ooh, so lucky I'm not that bad. So, okay. So that's my thing. Now, I will say me personally, I empathize a lot when I see someone suffering. But if it's a fictional show, I don't mind as much.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm watching the news, it's really depressing. But mm-hmm. if I'm watching like a movie. And so I'm going to go bluff.
You're right, for those reasons. So, people out there, let us know what you think about all these things. Because we talk about happiness, and then there's a whole debate around, like, as Americans, we're like hyper-focused on happiness. You know, there's a lot of people around, cultures around the world that are just like, the purpose of life isn't necessarily to constantly be happy. Now, what I'll say to that is, generally speaking, when we're using the term happiness in this episode, we're talking about well-being in the absence of struggle and suffering, which again is also another thing that some cultures will say, like, you can't avoid that as much as Americans want to. And certainly we can have a conversation about that. So yeah, but generally speaking, you know, humans are trying to move away from pain and fear and discomfort and towards relaxation and joy and connection and satisfaction and well-being.
And it's true for, I mean, it's just homeostasis is literally entropy. it's a universal dictum. Like, we are trying to move to a state of balance.
What'd you call me? Dictum?
You're a dictum.
So yeah, but when I think about all this in this episode, I personally am like, of course, I think about happiness a lot, and I'm trying to attain a good situation for myself. But doing this episode with you, Berto, has highlighted certain things that I wasn't focusing on as much as I should have and wasn't really paying attention. Even the vacation bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, because I don't, if I follow my own advice here, I would go on a 3-day vacation every month, right, for example. But that's not my mode, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I should, right?
Like, even like you and I, and with our families too, like, we could do little burst things,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Little bursties.
Little
we
bursties.
We have to have like, okay, monumental once in a lifetime thing.
Right. Yeah. There's plenty of things around Seattle, road trip sort of stuff, you know, bring the dogs.
And I'd say you and I used to do more of that when we were younger and had less responsibilities.
Right. Yeah. But I also think it's a mindset because I think you get to a certain age and you just lock in on your responsibilities.
Right.
You just get real locked in on, okay, work, take care of the kids, clean the house, pay the bills, get shit done. And at least for you and I, when we were younger, we either had the luxury or the time, the space, or the priorities of just like, hey, I matter.
Yeah.
I want to do things just for me.
That's right.
And what do I need?
Yeah.
And it is interesting. And of course, you know, there's some practicality to it, of course, but I don't know. I don't think I had realized how much I had slipped into, I think, a pretty unhappy oriented way of thinking and a way of living, really. Mm. And I think the pandemic really just established that, you know, just the unrelenting nature of the pandemic. And I also think that post pandemic or, you know, post vaccine, I was mainly focused on what I was deprived of during the pandemic, going out, eating out, spending time with people, that sort of stuff, instead of being more holistic about like, okay, yeah, going out to restaurants was something that was important to me that I missed during the pandemic. But if that's all I focus on, you know, and not on all the other aspects of life, like having a rational time schedule, having a good workout routine, having more vacations, essentially everything that work interferes with, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that is it for that episode. Everyone out there, be attuned to your happiness and take care of yourself because
you deserve it.